Hey guys, and welcome to the Money Podcast. I'm Stacy Johnson, your host, and this podcast is brought to you by MoneyTalksNews.com, serving up the best in personal finance news and advice since 1991. Today we're going to talk about how the government, at least when it comes to investing, doesn't really want you to get honest advice. Is that possible? Does the government really not care about you getting objective, honest financial advice? Could this be true? Well, to find out, we're going to go to one of my favorite people, Pam Kruger. Pam, welcome to the Money Podcast.
Thanks, Stacy. It's great to be here.
You know, when it was time for my parents to retire, their chief concern was where to park their travel trailer. Their home and cars, they were paid off. Their pensions were plentiful, their needs few. What a difference a generation makes. These days, pensions are disappearing, medical costs are ridiculous, and you can't earn squat at the bank. And that's why I designed a course developed specifically to help you win your retirement. It's called The Only Retirement Guide You'll Ever Need. Among other things, you're going to learn a simple, proven system to destroy all your debts, how to know you won't outlive your money, and how to score up to $12,000 more every year in Social Security. And that's just for starters. Do you want to win your retirement? Then go to MoneyTalksNews.com and look for the Academy button at the top of the page. That's MoneyTalksNews.com, then click on Academy. MoneyTalksNews.com, Academy. You're going to be glad you did this. I guarantee it. Now, Pam and I have known each other for quite a long time. We haven't been in constant contact, but we first met about 30 years ago, and we have similar backgrounds. Pam, give me a little bit about your background.
Okay. Real quick time capsule, Stacey. So I started in the business as a stockbroker at the ripe old age of 24. And, you know, really, this is an important point that we're going to be making as we talk further. When I was hired as a broker and passed my Series 7, I remember about 2 weeks into the role, I called my dad and I said, "Hey, I wasn't hired as a broker. They want me to be a telemarketer. That's all I'm doing. Dad is making phone calls, pushing investments on people." And I felt it was a little stupid. It didn't make sense to me. So I pretty much planned on maybe quitting and maybe going to law school or getting fired. And maybe I go to law school. But instead of getting fired, Stacey, I got promoted. And when I got promoted, suddenly I was in management at age 28. And I'm managing at that point between 40 and 60 brokers. And you know, the one thing that occurred to me that I didn't like was the fact that the worse my brokers behaved, meaning the more aggressive they were at selling those investments to people, the more money I made. And I didn't like that. I just
didn't. Yeah, you know, actually, Pam, that reminds me of a little anecdote of my own. I passed a CPA exam in 1981. And so I saw this brokerage firm, thought it might be fun to work there. Went in to get it for an interview, and I swear to God, this is the truth. The manager of the brokerage firm looked across the desk at me, and he said, "I would rather have a used car salesman sitting across the desk from me right now than a CPA." That's a true story.
Because you'd be much more successful.
Yeah. So I, like you, became a telephone solicitor, calling people at home at night for years. Made a lot of money. But left me with a pretty bad taste in my mouth about the financial advisory business.
And like you, like me, you also wound up being a manager.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So after that little foray in the brokerage world, I left. And basically, Stacey, I've become sort of an investor advocate, I would say, has been my career for the past several years. And so I created Money Track, which is a TV series that we were on 255 of the PBS stations. And I was working in partnership with securities regulators to educate the public about what works and what doesn't work and how investing behind the scenes, you know, how things really work and what to avoid. And we were on 255 of those PBS stations, and we had John Bogle, and Ben Stein was a regular, and Warren Buffett's been on the show. And it was a lot of fun to introduce things directly to the public that everyone just needs to know and needs to understand how it works.
Well, you are eminently qualified to participate in this discussion, that's for sure. And I'm so jealous. You're like so famous.
Please.
I'm happy to have you on my podcast. Well, okay, let's get right into this thing now. Okay, we've got people out here that are listening and they want financial advice. First of all, let me ask you this, Pam. Does everybody need to have professional financial advice?
No. I really feel that I've kind of come to my own conclusion on this just anecdotally, but my feeling is that out of 100% of the population of consumers, about 15% really want to manage their own portfolios, do all their own investing. I mean, do everything themselves. Literally, like, I like to cut my own hair, right? No. So in terms of needing, you know, people don't need anything if you want to take the time to learn. But I find that about 15% of the population is willing to spend the time it takes to really learn enough so that they don't need any collaboration from anybody ever. And that want to manage their own money. And then you've got about 85% of the population that wants on, you know, some level, even if it's just a check-in once a year with an expert to say, hey, am I on the right track? And then you have other people who are at the other end of this extreme. And they're like, I don't want to do any of this. I want to go to somebody and turn everything over because I don't know anything and I don't want to know anything. So you kind of have everything along the continuum there.
Okay. Well, and fortunately for that 85% of the population, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a financial advisor. They're all over the place and totally trustworthy, each and every one. Am I right, Pam?
Oh, my God. So, yeah. So out of 500,000, roughly, 500,000 individuals in the United States label themselves a financial advisor. They might work at an insurance company as an insurance agent. They might work at a brokerage firm. 90% of all advisors are employed by a brokerage firm or by an insurance company. So that leaves only 10% who truly work independently and work only for the client, meaning they work only and directly for you, the client. They don't work for someone else.
Well, now, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense. Are you telling me that 90% of brokers, their advice is an objective? They're not working for you? How can that be?
Well, you know, because who's buried in Grant's tomb? They don't work for you. They work for the brokerage firm or they work for the insurance company. Their first loyalty has to be to the person who's paying their paycheck. That ain't you. It's the employer.
But if they're claiming that they're financial advisors and they're... So basically, this is like going into a car dealership and assuming that the car salesman has my best interest at heart.
Precisely. Exactly. So it's that. So then you get home after you bought the SUV and you bought all of the protection products that, you know, all the add-ons and everything that you really don't need. And you get home and then you find out that you could have bought a very similar vehicle for $10,000 less had you done your homework. But are you then going to say, oh, yeah, well, the salesperson really had my best interest at heart and I'm so surprised? Of course not. The salesperson's there to sell all the bells and whistles. And it's not that different in the investment world.
Well, it's not fair then, because when I go into a car dealership or used car lot, I know I'm dealing with a salesperson who doesn't have my best interest at heart. But that's not fair for me to walk into some giant brokerage firm or financial advisory firm that's been around for generations and think that they're not going to give me honest advice. That's crazy.
You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. But instead of just making the whole industry evil, the way I think of it is it's been an evolutionary process. There was a time, Stacey, when you and I were brokers where we really did provide a service that was truly looking out for people because we were providing information that you couldn't get otherwise. You couldn't get earnings information, research reports on companies that were about to go public, you know, all kinds of really good research that we had that the consumer didn't have. They didn't have access to that. And that was the service that we provided as brokers. And then all of a sudden along came this brand new thing called the internet. And when that came along, it democratized all that information. No longer did brokers have access to special information. Everybody had access to it. So then they had to shift gears and create a new way to have value. And the new way to have value is to provide advice and basically to become and morph into financial advisors. We were not hired, Stacey, as advisors. We were hired as brokers.
Right. Salespeople.
Right.
Although I actually thought when I took the job that I was being hired as an advisor. That's why I thought my CPA certificate would be so interesting, you know, so valuable. I didn't realize I was going to be just a telephone solicitor.
Yeah. So it turns out that, you know, the CPA, you know, designation that you have was not going to be, you know, necessarily your ticket to success at a brokerage firm, because it wasn't advice and counseling that you were to provide. You were to sell products for that company. So that brings us back to this industry. This is an industry, not a profession, and it should never be confused, because a profession would mean that there's one standard by which all doctors and all lawyers have to be accountable, or they lose their standing and their ability to practice. That's not the case with advisors. There are different standards, different rules. Everybody's all over the map, and the consumer is pretty much blind in many ways to what really goes on with incentives and who's a salesman and who's an advisor.
And actually, now thank you very much, because you brought me back to the whole topic of this podcast. I said at the beginning of this, the government doesn't really want you to get honest advice, which is a pretty stark way of saying this. But let's talk about the different types of investment advice that's available out there. And specifically, the government was going to help us make sure that we got good advice with something called the fiduciary rule, right? Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, this was sort of the brainchild of a woman named Phyllis Borzi, who was with the Department of Labor during the Obama administration. And what she really wanted to set forth was one fiduciary standard by which all advisors would need to adhere and would be required to adhere, so that they're not able to play by different rules, which they are currently. That rule started to go into effect, and actually portions of that were beginning to be implemented. And then in 2017 and 18, 18 early, the rule was struck down. So that went away, but it didn't stop the discussion. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. People started learning and they started hearing, wait a minute, what do you mean the government was going to have to mandate that all advisors would have to be fiduciaries? And what we mean by that, Stacey, is
that sorry about that. That's Lola, the consumer canine that you're hearing in the background there.
And I've got my dog in the background. The fiduciary definition, what it really means is that you're talking about looking out for the best interest of the client, not the broker or the salesperson, the advisor. And that's very important. That would have been one standard. I'm not saying that the fiduciary rule was perfect, because you cannot legislate morality. And I think that's what you're trying to get to. That's the point you're making. Even if the government were to try to force brokers, brokerage firms, and salespeople to behave as true advisors looking out for the client's best interest, how do you enforce that? Well, you know, the only way to do it would really to be turning this whole industry into a profession, just like the legal profession or medical profession. And they're not going to do that.
Yeah, it's so weird, though, to think about, because, and I was following this, not as closely as you were, but I was following this fiduciary rule as it stumbled its way through Congress and through the SEC. And we almost got it. It almost became law or rule, I guess it would be. But anyway, people were literally arguing, and I mean members of Congress, were literally saying, well, no, financial advisors shouldn't have to put their clients' interest ahead of their own. And I was like, how can you possibly make an argument like that? It's insane.
Now, if they could stop and listen to the dialogue and hear themselves say those things, then they would realize how insane it is. So I think that the takeaway from all of what did not happen at a government level puts the onus on the consumer to become educated and wise up, you know, meaning everybody, all of us. We have to be much more aware that it is not a profession. And, you know, in this case, it would be the same thing as you go to see your doctor And the very first thing that comes out of his mouth or her mouth is, "Hey, Stacy, I've got this brand new prescription, baby. You're going to love it." And you're going to say, "Wait a second, I haven't even told you where it hurts." And the doc's going to say, "Oh, okay, yeah, you can tell me about that. But in the back of my mind, I want to sell you the prescription." If that were the case, it would be the equivalent of what we do in financial services.
It's just ridiculous. But okay, let's back up a little bit here, because the government actually did do something, though. The fiduciary standard did not become a rule, but something else did. And that was the regulation best interest. Is that what it is?
Yeah. So this is just very recent. This is just, you know, something that just has been that went through. It's called Reg BI. Again, it's kind of silly, isn't it? It's Reg Best Interest. Can you believe we're having a conversation about whether or not an advisor has to act in the client's best interest? Okay. What it does is it kind of bans some of the bad practices and the bad behavior. It makes brokers, supposedly they're going to have to explain their conflicts of interest. If I want to sell you that SUV with all those bells and whistles, I can still sell you the SUV with all those bells and whistles rather than sell you the Vanguard SUV that doesn't cost anything. But, you know, now under BI, Reg BI, which is what you're referring to, I'm supposed to tell you about it, Stacey. I'm supposed to disclose it. Now, can I ask you a question? Critics are all over this thing because they're like, really? How are you going to enforce that? How are you going to get in the middle of a conversation between a consumer and a broker who's about to, you know, sell, you know, someone into an annuity or into an investment fund when they could have had a fund that cost half as much? Or they sell the fund that's half as much, but then they move the assets into an account where they can get an asset under management fee and double dip. Now, if the consumer's not going to know the difference to complain, where's the crime? Who's going to know?
Yeah, you're right. So what is the solution to all this, Pam? I mean, I hope that what we've done thus far is freak people out to telling them that they probably might not be getting objective advice when they go out to pay for it. But let's give them a solution. What should they be doing?
Hi, everyone. Aaron here. Could you use an extra $991? Yeah, I sure could. $991. Believe it or not, that is the average amount our newsletter subscribers report saving every year. Our totally free Money Talks newsletter is stuffed with actionable advice and tips to help boost your savings and slash your expenses. It only takes 2 seconds to subscribe. Just go to moneytalksnews.com. You'll see the sign up right there on the homepage. Do it now, and you'll also get a free ebook, 208 Ways to Save Money Every Day. I've used this book. It's great. That alone is a $15 value. So let's recap. $991 to gain, nothing to lose. Subscribe right now at moneytalksnews.com. That's moneytalksnews.com. I'll also put that link in our show notes. Sign up now. You'll be glad you did.
All right. So now that you're awake, fully awake, and now that you're aware that not everybody's on the same playing field, you need to know that advisors, all advisors, play by either the set of rules called fiduciary, which I just explained is a higher standard. You legally, a fiduciary must put the client's best interest ahead of their own. And then you've got this 90% that work for brokerage firms who are salespeople for those brokerage firms who adhere to the brokerage firm's own suitability standard, totally different than fiduciary. So there's two sets of rules. So the 90% are playing by the lower standard rules. Only 10% of advisors out there, here's your solution we're getting to. There's 10% of all advisors who are truly independent. They are fiduciaries. The SEC does require it, because they're independent. They don't work for a brokerage firm. They only work for the client. And now you might say, great, all I have to do is shop for an advisor within that 10%. I can just throw a dart at a dartboard and get the right advisor. And the answer there is there has to be a lot of vetting. And that's where we have some tips on how to do that. But, you know, that's at least you start dealing with the 10% instead of the 90%. So you're talking about a population of advisors that's around 50,000 individual advisors across the US, not 500,000. So once you've narrowed it down, you've screened it down so that you really want to get your advice from a true fiduciary advisor who's independent, then we have to start getting looking for some tips on what to look out for and avoid, and what we find to be, you know, really a good qualification, set of qualifications to be an advisor, to work for you.
Well, you know, okay, now, Pam, we're going to have a different conversation about how exactly to find good investment advice. And at this point, actually, let me stop and say that Pam has a solution for this problem. And it's called WealthRamp. It's a company of which she's the CEO, and it helps people find the right investment advisor. So I wanted to give you a little plug there, Pam, because you've done a lot of work in this arena. You obviously are an expert at it, and it's something that we're going to explore further in another podcast. But in the meantime, I'm a person that doesn't know anything. I've heard this podcast. Now I'm a little afraid to get financial advice. You've told me that 90% of these people might, I mean, I'm sure there are some trustworthy people in every arena, but you've told me to be cautious about 90% of people. What question do I specifically ask to know what kind of advice I'm getting?
I want you to not be afraid to, when you do talk to an independent advisor, I want you to ask, you know, how are you compensated? Who's paying you? I want to know that, not because I'm nosy. It's my business. I need to know all the different ways you get paid. So when you're talking to an advisor who is independent, you want to make sure that they can put a fiduciary oath in writing on the firm's letterhead so that you know you're getting it in writing. Number two, you want to ask, you know, are you fee only? And if you're not, please explain to me other ways you get compensated. Because Stacey, it's possible for an independent advisor to double dip and get both commissions, even if they don't work for a brokerage firm. They can still get kickbacks from products. And I don't want that, because it makes the incentives, it misaligns the objectives. The interests are not being served if I know that I'm going to make more money if I sell you fund A versus fund B and still get a commission. So that's a very, very important driver. You know, how are you compensated? Please delineate and tell me, list out all the different ways you get paid. And I want that fiduciary oath in writing. That's very important. And then you can start to drill down into more logical questions. You know, how long have you been established? You know, how many clients do you have? How many assets under management? There's a lot of things from there. But at the top level of screening away, you want to make sure they're not selling for anybody else, that they're really only working only and directly for you. And then, of course, you want to ask what their fees are. And then we want to make sure those fees are reasonable and fall within a reasonable range.
That's awesome advice. And it's simple advice. But now, we're going to devote an entire podcast to the solution that you've created for this, Pam. So, but before we quit this one, I'm sorry to keep circling back on this, but it just seems like this is such a rat's nest. You know, there's all these people getting paid all these different ways. Some are qualified, some aren't. Some are licensed, some aren't. As a matter of fact, I did a story many years ago at a barber's chair, a TV news story, where I said, you know, the guy cutting my hair has more credentials than the person who might be giving you financial advice, because you really don't have to have any.
That's right. And that's so, right. It's a very, very confusing mess of credentials, and it's all a mishmash. Everybody knows it. Okay. Everybody in this industry knows it. Financial advisors themselves are confused. If you start talking to advisors about Reg BI, which is that regulation best interest, the SEC, you know, passed just recently, you're going to get some advisors who are going to be like, I don't even know what's going on, because it's just a big, confusing mess. And really, it's that the brokerage industry has so much money and clout and lobbyists. They have spent billions and billions of dollars, Stacey, to advertise that they want to you know, work with you and help you build your wealth and be your advisor. At the same time, they're spending billions to lobby. Please let us hang on to the lowest possible standard. Please don't make us be fiduciaries and put best interests first. So that's what it's about. It's the industry itself. And it's just a big fight over, you know, how do we change this industry? And it's just in a state of flux.
Well, it's just so fascinating to me, though. And you've already answered, I think, the question I was about to ask you. The government has regulations about who could be a doctor and who could be a dentist and who could be a lawyer and who could be a CPA. How come they don't have regulations about this? Why are they letting these people steal? Because this isn't getting a tooth pulled. This is not buying an SUV. This is your life savings. Why is the government allowing this to happen to people?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that I would argue that financial advice is right up there with the importance of health and well-being, financial well-being and legal. I think that it's the three pillars. I think there's nothing more important than, you know, a couple or a person who's worked their tail off to have $500,000 or $1 million in savings. And for those people to be facing retirement and not have proper planning and not have someone who's unbiased, who will put their best interests first, it's a crime. It's so true, but it's really the industry. It's the evolution of the way that this brokerage industry has evolved. Look at financial services. It's a $1 trillion industry. The amount of money they can spend to lobby, to continue to sell products and not have to be held to a higher standard, can't keep up with the government.
It's just amazing to me that this is happening. And, you know, I have to say, too, that you've been doing this a really long time. I have, too, trying to be a consumer advocates, you know, and I really thought that I've been doing this, I think, 27 years. And I've been thinking, I've thought the entire time, well, any second now, this whole commission model is going to collapse under its own weight. I mean, it obviously doesn't make sense. You know, you read article after article. I mean, there's huge scandals that have taken place among Wall Street firms over and over. And yet, here we are, 27 years later, still going on.
But it's invisible. It is collapsing. It's just, it's not doing it overnight and it's not doing it fast enough. There's no linchpin that gets pulled out underneath and comes crashing down. Little things are eating away at it. The fiduciary rule that was introduced, even if it didn't happen, what did it do? It made us aware. That's why we're doing this podcast.
Well, you're
right.
You're right.
We would not be talking about this if this were 15 years ago, because nobody would know the difference. Nobody would know what we're saying. So now, because of all of what's written and all of what you, how you can educate yourself for consumers, education is the only protection you have against having crappy financial advice or worse. That's all you have. Education.
Well said, Pam. And this is why we both devoted our lives to that exact thing. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up, but I really am looking forward to doing another podcast with you to talk about finding good investment advice and especially what you've pioneered in doing so. And for those of you who can't wait for the next podcast, you can go to Pam's website right now. It's called wealthramp.com, wealth, R-A-M-P.com. And it's an awesome site. We promote it on moneytalksnews.com. It's a great way to find an objective financial advisor. If you want to learn more about it, all you have to do is tune into our next podcast. In the meantime, Pam, you're such an awesome person. I really appreciate you showing up today and helping me understand this stuff and helping other people out there.
This is fun, and I just really appreciate you having me on. Thanks.
We'll be doing it again.
All right.
All right. Have a great one. I will talk to you again soon. And goodbye to all of our listeners, and thanks for tuning in. This is Stacy Johnson with Your Money.